This podcast was recorded on the lands of the Boon Wurrung people of the Kulin Nation, the land on which we're lucky enough to raise our sons and daughters. Always was and always will be Aboriginal land. This episode of Witching Hour is brought to you by us, Loz and Lou, as we have now released our go-to guides. We're celebrating our 30th episode today, and if you've loved what we've created here, then hit that subscribe button and make a purchase of a go-to guide to make sure that you're set up for success for a return to paid work.
You can shop our go-to guides now at readyornot.au. Hello and welcome to Witching Hour, the podcast that looks at what's exciting, delighting, intriguing and frustrating us when it comes to making work, work. I'm Lou.
And I'm Loz. Starting things with a good news story, a major change. This actually isn't that new, I should say, but I only stumbled across it recently.
I didn't know this, so okay. I'm glad you're bringing it up.
Good. A major change to private health fund policies could be saving families thousands of dollars in premiums, but many don't know about it, including yourself and me. The age limit for dependent children has been raised from 25 to 31, meaning that they can be included in family policies for longer. Why is this great, may you ask? Well, when you have individual policies, usually, like the older that you get, obviously, the more likely it is that you're going to have an injury. Which is strange, actually, now that I've come to think of that as I say it, because I feel like kids are far more accident prone than like a 16-year-old.
This is so accident prone. That's so true. But I guess then when you get to later age, we're talking, right?
Yeah, true. But the reason it does save you a heap of money is because as kids get older, I mean, I'm sure, I can't imagine that many of our listeners have like, you know, 25-year-old children, but potentially, I mean, who knows?
Wouldn't that be cool?
Exactly. It does mean that purchasing individual policies, even for your kids, is more expensive than having them on the family policy. Not suggesting that you should pay for your children until they're 31. However, it does mean that they could pay for their policy on your family insurance and it would cost them less, which is a nice thing to do for your kids.
So a bit of a transfer instead of having your own policies.
Exactly. On the flip side, though, it does mean that as a general population, we are seeing that kids are going to be home at this point in time till around the age of 31. So what does that mean for our kids, Lou? When are they leaving? Are we going to have to set up a bungalow? What's the go here?
Oh, we're definitely going to need a bungalow. I don't know if I can do 31 of them inside my house. Imagine they're like, no, I don't like fried rice. I'm not having that for dinner. I don't think that will fly at 31.
Nah, it won't. It won't. But
so you're basically telling me this because I assume this is in direct correlation with the cost of living.
Yes.
And so these policies are changing with that. And so that's why we're seeing kids stay at home longer.
That's true.
Catch 22, sort of nice, sort of terrible. Stay tuned.
So terrifying. Your kids are going to get married and they'll still be living in your house.
All right. A few updates from my camp related to this hens. Firstly, went to Chadstone, which is the fashion capital of Melbourne, if you're not from Melbourne. Posey screams the whole time. I actually thought it was going to be a really nice outing. Chadstone, 8 o'clock on a Friday night. I live down the coast. No such thing as Chadstone where I'm from. So I thought I was going to have myself a quite good time. Had a birthday voucher to spend.
No bueno.
It was no bueno at all.
Oh,
she screamed the whole time. Nothing really looked good, in my opinion, on my soft postpartum bod. And Chadstone was heaving. Where all these people were coming from, I am not sure, but there were people everywhere. So that's my first update. Second, my parents have an apartment that I stay at when I go to Melbourne. Very lucky. We were staying there for this hens. Hayden was having both kids there. Thought I'd use one of their pixters, which are those dental floss things. Have you ever used one of them? They're like on little wires with little brushes. Mum and Dad swear by them.
I know it.
I've always thought they're a bit rogue. Didn't have floss on me, used a pickster, chipped my tooth. A bit of my tooth came out.
Oh, my God. Are they the single-use things or the ones that you're meant to use?
They're terrible. I mean, you could use them a few times, I think, but technically I would say they're for single-use purposes.
Chipped your tooth? How hard were you going, doll? You must have really been getting in
there. Yeah, I think, you know, when you're not grinding up on much, maybe you take it out on your teeth. I'm not sure. But lost a bit of a tooth, which was probably not what I needed as I'm getting ready to leave my baby for the first time. From there, smooth sailing, picked up our girlfriend in Richmond, went to Collingwood where some of our other coast friends had booked a hotel for the night. And it was great. She got her hair and makeup done by one of our friends. I wanted to share my pump schedule for anyone like me that totally forgets how often you pump when you go out. So Posey was about 8 weeks old at this time. I pumped at about 3 p.m., 6 p.m. and when I got home at about 10, 10:30 p.m. Had a great time, had a bit of a dance, didn't feel too much pelvic floor pain, which is great.
Probably because you had a few drinks, sweetie.
Yeah, true. Did have a few drinks without getting too sloshed. I had a few drinks.
Yeah.
I got tapped on the shoulder by my other friend who's postpartum about a month ahead of me. She said, I'm going home. I said, take me with you, sweetie. Went via Macca's, got ourselves a delicious and nutritious meal. Got home at about 10, 10:30.
What'd you get?
Look, I did get a large cheeseburger meal.
Oh, I would have thought you would have gone for the fillet meat, fillet, what's it called? The chicken fillet.
Yeah, I know. I used to be pescatarian and I'm not a big meat eater, so it's really weird that when it comes to Macca's, I am a cheeseburger girl. Hate to admit it, but there you go, everyone. Please don't judge me. Got home, felt full, felt happy. Hayden was just woke up when I got home. Him and Posey were asleep on the bed together, her in your docker top, which was very cute. And I did say to him as I was pumping that, If she needs me, I'm happy to feed in, say, 5 hours' time. I hadn't had that much to drink and I was pumping and dumping during the day. And he did bring her in at about 3:30 after feeding her and her needing more milk. But because I didn't go too wild, I actually felt fine and I felt good the next day. So
that is a win.
If anyone else is heading out to a hens, I hope it goes as well as it did for me. Because I do love a drink and I do love some fun. So I was nervous. I was really nervous that I would get out there and forget about all of my responsibilities. That didn't happen. So maybe I am a proper adult. That's great news for me. And one more update is that Posey is about 10 weeks as we're recording now. This will go live when she's about 12 weeks. And we're starting to get better chunks of sleep. So last week we had a 5 hour chunk and a 6 hour chunk.
6 hours?
Yeah.
Shit me. That's unbelievable.
Not sure if I'm any less tired, but we'll take it.
Oh, I'd take it. Absolutely. That's great.
Do you have any updates before I keep being self-indulgent?
No, I love the self-indulgent. You're never this self-indulgent. I mean, not that you are anyway. That sounded terrible as I said that.
No, I actually thought that was a great compliment. So thank you. So then I'll get into it. Today, we discussed the let them theory, very topical given our chat about the mental load 2 weeks ago and also our poll today. Women that say they're being routinely delayed or denied epidurals when giving birth because of mistaken beliefs about their impact on labour. I am already getting breathless just thinking about the stress of that. And lastly, your answers to our poll all about maternal gatekeeping. Take it away, Lozzie.
The let them theory. This concept, known as the let them theory, originally popularized by Mel Robbins, offers a transformative approach as to how we handle expectations and control in our personal and professional lives. So the core of the let them theory at its heart is releasing the need to control others, whether it's a colleague, a family member. I love how it says this, or a stranger, because I actually do. I am like that with strangers and certain
weird things.
Oh,
you would be. It'd be like, let me think, and I am too, so don't take this as an insult. It'd be like if someone was standing too close to you in a line at the supermarket. Like,
yeah, I couldn't cope. I'd be
off.
Yeah.
I'd give them just a little eye, just make them feel a little bit uncomfortable.
Yeah. The theory encourages us to let people be as they are without imposing our expectations or desires on them. This approach is not only liberating, but also reduces stress and anxiety and allows us to focus more on our own goals and our own well-being.
The timing of bringing this to us is perfect because of the mental load. I love that you brought this to us this week.
Well, there's been a lot of chat too on TikTok. I know you're not a big TikToker, but it's everywhere. Like, I was scrolling on TikTok the other night and the amount of let them things that keep popping up to me, obviously because I've Googled it, as in it's no surprise.
How do you let them when you love control? When you're seeing this on TikTok, is it from, because TikTok for me, I always think of it as a platform for teenagers. Is this from the motherhood crowd? Is this from the corporate crowd? Which girlies are talking about the let them theory?
A lot of mothers, I would say. It's a great question, actually, Lou. A lot of mothers, but I'm seeing it from a lot of motivational type speakers. So, yeah, I wanted to get a bit more of an understanding of its application in the workplace workplace. So they say for women in the workplace, the let them theory can be particularly empowering. Often we find ourselves trying to meet unrealistic expectations or attempting to control situations that are completely beyond our influence. Good example would be when you're in that middle management role, you're kind of stuck between having the authority to make big impactful decisions, but then also not really having
the final say.
Exactly. Or the ability to say yes. So you have to go through a bunch of other people, and it can become really frustrating because you may have your manager on side who is connected to one person in that C-suite, but then you've got six other people that you don't have direct control over, and the outcome could be a no. And you think, far out, I've just put all of this effort into this. Everyone's telling me it's great and it still didn't get the go ahead. It can be frustrating. Anyway, they're saying it's time to let it go. By adopting this theory, we can redirect our energy towards our own growth. So you can focus more on self-development, personal development in other areas, and productivity rather than getting caught up in what others are doing in the organization. What's your view on the let them theory? I think we've got different views.
The timing of you bringing this to me is perfect because I was thinking of different content ideas of introducing our go-to guides, which are now live at the time of this going to air. And I was thinking about asking you and you asking me what the best piece of advice or the best piece of leadership we've seen from above us has been. I was thinking about my manager at Cricket Australia, who is an incredibly helpful, resourceful person. One day, and it actually was inspired by The Bold Type, which is a great TV series that we both loved. And
was that on Stan?
Leader in that. Yeah. And we loved the boss in that. She was brilliant.
Yes.
And my manager one day said to me, I think I try too much to help people figure things out. So I am going to let you figure things out for yourself a bit more. I'm here to support you, but I'm not going to direct you to all of the different ways that you could solve this problem. I'll let you think about them and you can come to me with what you think and we can hash it out together. And I thought it was one of the best pieces of advice I'd ever heard, and it very much lends into this let them theory. But what was your actual question, Lozzie?
No, I'm curious just to understand your take personally on the let them theory and whether you would adopt it or not, or if you think it's beneficial for women.
I have a feeling that you and I will be opposite in where we let them and where we don't. I think I am very hesitant to let go of control in a work setting. In terms of these go-to guides, we're trying to outsource things to get things off our plate, but I couldn't help but need to control the design of the templates. I couldn't send them off. You said to me, we can outsource this. And I said, yes, great idea. Not going to do it though.
But you can't.
I am going to edit it so much once that person does it that I may as well do it. However, in my personal life, I think I might be more of a let them person because I'm perhaps not as organized and clean as you. Thoughts, feelings, opinions.
Agree. It's difficult for me to see the overarching benefit of the let them theory in the workplace when I have firsthand seen so many examples of where people weren't as involved as they should have been from a senior leadership perspective, and it's kind of screwed them over.
Mm.
Like when you're learning and you're more junior and you're getting your feet or you haven't done something for the first time, I completely agree with what you said. You need to let people do things by themselves. And perhaps from that learning or from the way that they do things, a new process might come up, a new way of thinking around it might come up. But the more senior you get, if you let things slide too much and it blurs into not laziness, but complacency, I don't think it works.
Do you have an example of when this has happened?
Yes. I used to work for an organization and one of their key values, which I'm not sure if it still is, but one of their key values was let others make decisions. And one thing that really grated me about that was because it was a value, people would rely on it or they'd fall back on it. So if a poor decision was made by someone that really wasn't authorized to make that decision, someone in a senior leadership capacity would say, I'm living by the values and I let them make a decision.
Oh, that's really funny. So no one really can ever take blame then.
Exactly. So it becomes a lack of responsibility. and accountability, which I think is really bad because big mistakes happen and then there's no one accountable for it. And it's just, there's no line of authority. I just don't think that works. But what I think could have been a better value, being the psycho that I am, is let people make educated decisions. So there should be a framework where there's questions around it. Have you, Lou, consulted this person on that decision? Have you made sure that you've researched from these three key stakeholders? Have you got their input?
Yeah.
If you're asking the right questions, then I think the let them theory is fine.
Yeah. So let them with a framework. Don't let them run loose.
No.
That is exactly how my manager worked too, because our job was really confusing and there were so many different internal stakeholders. It was always so hard to know where to go. She'd always give me the guiding light of go see X, Y, and Z, but then she'd let me take it from there. So I think she was the perfect example of how we should apply the let them theory.
Hate to interrupt you, but it just came to my mind. If we use that let them theory with the royals and this whole absolute freaking PR disaster, they wouldn't have stepped in and set the record straight. And this just let them would have become a fucking nightmare. So the cheating rumors, which absolutely are true, by the way, 100%. Are they? Are you joking?
Loz has intel.
Nah, just.
You got a gut.
I feel it in my core. And these other rumors flying around that, you know, Kate has all these mental health issues. Of course she does. If her husband's frigging doing the dirty on her, what do you expect? She's not just sitting there, la, 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 I'm happy. You know, life is dandy.
And how can you be in the public eye and be happy in that level?
It would be super stressful. But if they didn't step in and she didn't say her piece about what is happening to her, which is very sad,
yeah. The
let them theory would have blown into this enormous disaster.
And it
globally.
Already did, really. Like it already it did. But they contained it just in time.
Let them, you know, let them come up with a narrative. No, step in and set it straight.
Just on this, and I don't want to spend too much time on it because by the time this goes live, it will well and truly be old news. But I'm not a royal fan. I think the royal institution is disgusting. I think the white supremacy tied to it is gross, all of that. But still, I'm going to come out to defend Kate that the way she's been turned into a meme is disgraceful. I've seen feminist businesses laughing at her. We had no idea what was going on. I had a feeling it was going to be something bad. I think it's disgusting the way she has been treated, and that is coming from someone that is not a royal sympathizer in any way. Last thing I want to talk to you about on the let them theory is what are you doing to apply that at home? Because we know we've spoken about the fact that you find it hard to let go.
Yes.
How do you think you apply that in the home, or you're trying to apply that in the home?
I'm allowing my kids to make mess and play with it as long as when the day is done and the mess is sitting there, it is cleaned up.
I like that. You're not cleaning as you go.
Nah, I hate to say that I'm not. I'm not as much.
Mm.
Sienna said to me the other day, hey, I was playing with that. And all I could think about was, babe, you've got 500 Barbies on the floor. What the fuck is going on here? Are you not playing with them all? Put them away.
How annoying would that be as the kid though? I'd be so annoyed with you. I was in the middle of something.
Yeah. Also, do you know what she started doing, which is just so evil? When I tell her off, she started mimicking me.
Oh, no. I'm not ready for
that. It is so good. This is what she does. She goes, I'm like, Sienna, put that down. She's, Sienna, put that down. I'm like, you little shit.
I love it.
But it's so funny. I can't help but laugh. And then when I laugh, it continues on. Anyway, it's a story for another time. But I am trying to be more fluid and relaxo with the kids. Is it working? It's going to take some time. It's a process.
A work in process. A work in progress, rather. Stay tuned.
Women traumatized after being denied pain relief during childbirth as experts bemoan system failure. In short, women say they're being routinely delayed or denied epidurals when giving birth because of mistaken beliefs about the impact of labor. The ABC heard from nearly 4,000 women across the country as part of the Birth Project, and experts say myths about epidurals are pervasive. After nearly 12 hours of labor with her first child, Samantha Burgess reached a point where she knew she could no longer cope with the pain. So she told hospital staff that she wanted an epidural. Pretty common practice. Mm. It was the third time that she had asked for pain relief over the course of the day, but each time her requests for help were met with resistance. About 7 hours after she first requested help, Samantha ultimately received an epidural. So it's not that she didn't get it in the end, it's that she did, but she felt like she wasn't being heard or seen during her
birth.
7 hours
later.
She said her experience left her traumatized and she developed postpartum depression and rage. Fair enough, Sam. I would too. It feels like I lost a part of myself when I gave birth, she said. Globally, Australia's epidural spinal rate sits in the mid-range at 46%, far lower than France at 85%, but higher than the UK at 31%.
I'm really surprised that France is that high. I thought they were quite woo-woo in France. There you go.
Maybe not. When you first heard this, what did you think, Lou? We've had different experiences. I'm super keen to get your thoughts.
When I first read through this, I feel the sense of unsafety that she would feel. Being in labor is one of the most vulnerable times of your life. Yes, it's empowering. It can be amazing. It can be beautiful things, but it's also scary. It's stressful. No matter whether you have a good or a bad experience, of course, there's going to be some stress and fear tied into pain and how long the pain's going to last, when the baby's going to come, all of that. I'm sure there's some people that can move past that, but the vast majority of us will go into that space. The idea of someone not meeting my needs in that time makes me feel terrified for this woman. And I think even though I've had two, what you call, I hate to say this word, but I don't know another word for it. Even though I've had two natural labors, I haven't had pain relief. I'm all for choice. If this woman is asking for an epidural, give it to her. Of course, this has led to so many issues because she didn't feel safe, she didn't feel in control, and she didn't feel empowered. How are you meant to start your motherhood journey on a positive note after all of that? It makes me really angry.
I think it also gives and it eats into the stigma around public hospitals. I will say on the record, one of the reasons I chose to go private, and I genuinely don't think I'm alone here, is because my pain threshold and my fear of pain around childbirth is so great that I didn't even want to risk not having an option to get an epidural. And so often we hear these stories about people that go through the public system, and it's nothing against the public system. I know so many women and so many friends have had incredible experiences, but it's that small percentage of people that haven't. The fear mongering around it was enough to make me genuinely think I'd prefer to put money aside and have that as like the very first go-to option. I don't want to have a situation where I'm like begging for pain relief and not being able to get it. So when you hear stories like this, it further adds that anxiety into a birthing space, which predominantly doesn't have that.
It is just another area where women aren't trusted with their own bodies too. And it also brings up for me how misdiagnosed women get in the medical system compared to men.
Yeah.
And how we're so often not looked after and need to go to bat for ourselves more. When I was on the pill, I am really prone to severe migraines to the point where I've been to hospital because mum, when I was younger, couldn't get anything into me. I was just vomiting, horrific migraines. She didn't know what to do with me. I needed to go on a drip. Nothing worked. Because of that, whatever hormonal pattern or whatever hereditary thing I've inherited, I shouldn't be on the pill, as in the contraceptive pill. It did not work with me.
Yeah.
For years, I was on it, getting these bad migraines. No one was helping me. No one was finding that link until I went to this doctor who then put me on Depo instead, which was an injection for contraception every quarter. It's not the Implanon. It's quite literally something injected into you. Nothing stays in you in terms of a device.
Yeah.
So then I was on that for a while. And then it was another doctor, a more female-led doctor. So firstly, the person that put me on the Depo said, you should not be on the contraceptive pill. You are more prone to stroke as it is. There's history of it in my family, and also with migraines, there's normally a correlation. Get put on the Depo. Another doctor down the line says to me, you should not be on the Depo as a Caucasian woman. It's not a matter of if it makes your bones more brittle, it's a matter of when. And I know I'm drawing a long bow here, but it all ties into that we don't trust women with their bodies and we don't look after them properly.
Yeah. I think that's what Samantha was trying to say in this article. Yes, she got the epidural. Like, a lot of people would have read that and thought, what's the big deal? You got the epidural. But it's not about that. It's about the 7 hours that she waited in her mind thinking, I'm sure this is an exaggeration, but I'm going to die. I can't cope with this pain. This is horrific. Get this kid out. The trauma I think you would have off the back of that And that special moment that you're meant to have with your kid would probably be met with relief, like, thank fucking Christ that's over, which is not really how you want to feel. Or it's not how you're told you should feel after you have a baby, which causes all these onflow effects down the track of being like, I'm not connecting with my baby. I didn't feel like that when she came out. Of course you didn't, babe. You felt exhausted, like you weren't being listened to, like you weren't being heard, like you were being ignored from the professionals that actually are there to meet your needs.
It should be all about her choice and it should be about no one else's judgment. It's the sort of thing that if you read this article to me before I had given birth, I would have sympathized, but I would have not thought too much about it. Now, what it reminds me of is the unsafety you feel when you're a child, when you're not being properly looked after. If you're with, say, you know, when you would have once upon a time gone to a friend's house and you just didn't like the parents, for example, you don't think they treated you well or looked after you and you just didn't feel safe. That's what this reminds me of. She would have felt unsafe from the get-go of her motherhood journey and look at the effect it's had on her life.
Yeah, it's bad. I will make a note to myself to follow this one up, particularly because I think it's so relevant when people are doing their research between going public and private. And I do think articles like this have such a big impact on the end decision of what you end up going, even though this may not be as common as it seems.
I've had two really good experiences in the public system, but I really hear what you're saying and I totally understand why people would make that choice if they're fearful of birth and they don't feel like they're going to be heard in the public system. We'll have to do a bit more digging. I've seen a lot about this report, but I've never read it deeply, so we'll have to look into it more. So, Lozzie, our episode 2 weeks ago spoke about the mental load and maternal gatekeeping a lot. And so that inspired this poll, which is all about maternal gatekeeping. The first question is, or the first statement is, I find it hard for things not to be done my way. What percentage of people said yes versus no versus I used to, but not anymore? You can either guess percentages or the most popular.
Most popular, yes.
You're right. Yes is
70%.
58. So you're not too far off. No was 6%. Which is, I wish I was one of those people.
Who are they?
I'm more of the I used to, but not anymore camp because I'm letting go of it. And that's the 36%. So those people that have totally let go,
kudos to you. Give me some tips.
Let's catch up. Give us your tip. Next one.
Let's catch up.
I've let go of things being done a certain way. Yes, no, trying to are the options. What's the most popular?
Trying to. I think we're all trying to.
What percent?
42%.
Oh, you're not doing as well today, my doll. 63% for that.
Oh.
9% of people,
that's
so they've
me.
Not let go of things being done a certain way. That is Loz. You are representing that camp. I'm representing the trying to camp. And then the yes people, we're loving them. They're sitting at 29%. I then asked what the first thing people are letting go of is. A few answers here. Kitchen cleanup at end of the day. Love to see it. Everything done is better than perfect. Naps when naps aren't working. That's an interesting one. I like that.
Oh, that's a good one.
The food dad makes for baby girl. Another brilliant one. Don't worry about it all being perfect all the time. They are probably going to eat hot chips when they're 10 anyway.
Can I just say something on that? Oh, how do I frame this in a nice manner? Oh, I just won't. Ryan had the kids literally for a day and a bit. And you could tell what they'd eaten by the color of Zave's poop. Yogurt, cheese, white bread, because his poo looked like a fucking Koyo, what's it called? A Yochi cafe latte colour. Yeah.
Oh, no, that's
a big no. Has he had a lot of yogurt?
That's pretty much all Ray eats. So that's probably our baseline of what Ray's poo looks like. Or his poo has like retrospectively fit itself to look healthy because all he does is eat yogurt. Some more here. How my husband gets baby to go to sleep. My friend said something that made me laugh. I said I had let go of something and now I actually can't think of a thing I have truly let go of. And the last one here, perfect nutritional home-cooked meals for my child and a messy home.
Yeah.
So similar themes there. We're not worrying too much about getting every bit of nutrition into them in every meal. We're letting the house fall to the wayside a little bit. I've actually got a photo of the way I left the house this morning to go for daycare drop-off, so I might have to post that. And then some of us are just admitting that we're not letting go of things as well as we pretend we are. So my next question was, there's no denying that maternal gatekeeping is a symptom of the patriarchy. Do you see a direct correlation between maternal gatekeeping and weaponized incompetence? So the answers were yes, no, sort of.
Oh, that's hard. Sort of.
So yes was 59%, sort of 27%.
Yeah, I wanted to say yes. Yeah. I wanted to say it. I held myself back.
And no was 14%. There was one great answer that I'm going to pick from the next question. And that question was, if yes, how would you describe that correlation between maternal gatekeeping and weaponized incompetence? I think this one person nails it, so I won't go into any other answers. And that's non-primary carers could totally take advantage of maternal gatekeeping. I hate to see it, but we see it happen. We see in mum-dad relationships and perhaps also in same-sex relationships, that mum that yells at the dad because he's not doing things the way she wants to. And I know that it's a symptom of the patriarchy, so I'm not blaming that mum, but we do see it a lot. Do you see it a lot in your circles?
Yeah. Also, kids cotton onto that too. Sienna asked me the other day to make a sandwich. That, oh, no, I like the way mum makes it. I'm like, does. It's Vegemite on, like, it's Vegemite with butter.
The way I put butter and Vegemite on my toast is way better than Hayden does it.
Really? Oh, you put a lot of veggie.
No, I do a lot of butter and little dabs of veggie, but Hayden does it even film of Vegemite over the whole thing. But I'd still rather not get out of bed, so I just cop it. I'm so glad that Hayden doesn't listen to this podcast regularly. Really appreciate you, Dal. Next question. Why is it so hard to let go of things being done our way? Answers.
Because you're right. Your way's the best. It's good.
Lauren,
you're a fucking
gun.
You own it. You're good.
Oh, Loz. We've got to have a talk offline. Nah, I like it. Maybe an attempt to feel as though you have your shit together. That's quite an interesting take.
Yeah, it's a way of control. Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. I have often wondered if this idea of mothers controlling the home does stem back to them being told they weren't really welcome in workspaces, so it is an area of their lives where they felt like they could be the boss. I have wondered that. Maybe it's an attempt to keep some kind of order in the home.
Yeah,
absolutely. We know that we can't help but tie our self-worth to that even when we shouldn't. So you can find the things you need to find in the short space of time you have to find them.
Yeah, that's also very true.
Not a bad point. It is easier when you can find your shit. Lastly, husband half does them, gets me anxious, so would rather do it right. And last question was, anything else to add on maternal gatekeeping? A great tip that we've had before, but we'll always have it again because we always forget these things, but they help. Create a shared note in the app on your phone for things like nappy bag checklist is 100% helpful. That's a great one, nappy bag checklist. So you don't have to say, do we have that in there? Do we have this in there? Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Great tip. And speaking of tips, let's get into the Mozzie.
Okay, my tip, and I want to dive into this in another episode because I personally think it is really fascinating. Your choice of seat matters more than you think.
When I saw this on the run sheet, I couldn't figure out what that meant. I was like,
okay, I will tell you.
The proverbial seat, the seat at the table, what are we talking about here?
It subconsciously influences others' perceptions of you and your ideas. Be clear about your goals for the meeting before you choose a seat. Remember that proximity denotes agreement and sit close to someone whom you often agree with. I've been doing a bit of reading on this recently. I'm not entirely sure why. I think because it was just something that happened the other day and I found it intriguing. I was in a meeting. I am a contractor at the moment. So I have had some Zoom meetings and some physical in-person meetings, but because I've one step removed, it gives me a better feel for the people in the room. And also because I don't have the history or politics or, you know, have the relationships with people, I can come in and with a bit of like a fresh-eyed perspective.
And it's almost as though because you are on a short contract, this could all end soon. So there's almost less risk in a way if you were comfortable with just seeing out that contract and moving on.
Yeah. What I noted for both meetings, so both meetings were over quite a big decision. In one meeting, where everyone sat really shaped the conversation that was had, particularly for the person presenting. And in another meeting on the Zoom call even, your body language to that person of where the camera is, it fascinates me. Like with the decision that was being made, it wasn't like a yes or no answer. It was more of a, do you agree? How can we improve this? How can we tweak it? And obviously in every boardroom, in every meeting room, there's going to be different personalities with different prerogatives and different perspectives of what they want done that would better their department. So it does make a difference where you sit, because if you're the meeting organizer and the end goal is to get sign off, you do need to be quite picky about how you position things, but also who you position them with and your body language towards that person.
So what are we doing?
I mean, it depends. I ordered a book off Amazon for my Kindle for this. It depends what the objective of the meeting is. If it's to like have a discussion, if it's to formalize an agreement, if it's to make a decision, it depends on where you should sit and it depends who's in the room. But like one small takeaway is if you are wanting authority, if you want to seem like a person of authority that you know you shit, the best place to sit is at the end of the table.
Like almost taking head of the table daddy energy.
Yep, because all of the eyes directly are on you and all of those people are going to have to listen to you. They will all have to face their body to you. So you will feel innately more empowered, more in control, because their body language will show you that they've got the attention, that you've got the attention, sorry.
You've given me some food for thought. You'll have to read that book. I love where your brain goes compared to mine. That's why we work well together, because I would never think of something like this.
It's random. I did think of it.
Very random. Like, it's very interesting.
Strange. Yeah.
Okay, we'll give us some hot tips on that soon.
I will.
My tip this week comes from the fact that I have a freezer full of food and I've decided that this week, it's a busy week for us. By the time this has been aired, the Goju Guides will be live, but this is the last week that we're working on them. And so I have decided that this entire week, instead of just pulling out a freezer meal here and there when you're busy, I'm not cooking once this week. If Hayden wants something outside of what's in the freezer, he can cook and that's fine. He might have a steak night because I don't eat steak anyway, so he'll often do that. But instead of pulling out a freezer meal every now and then, it's a freezer week. I am just taking that load completely off my plate.
Sounds divine.
Pardon the pun. So that's my tip. When you are doubling your batches to freeze, think about maybe having a whole freezer week on those weeks that you're feeling incredibly overwhelmed by working and parenting.
Gorge. You clear that freezer.
That's it for us today, Lozzie.
It is. So as always, if you have loved listening to today's episode, please leave us a positive 5-star tick tick plus review. And follow us on readyornot.pod and keep your eyes out for our go-to guides. Hope you love them.
Which they'll actually be out by the time this is aired, which is great.
They will. I'm so excited.